The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Afternoon, you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today's date is September the 2nd in the year they call 2016. It is a Friday, a rainy Friday afternoon. So today we do have two guests scheduled for you today. I'm really excited about the young man and his refusal to stand up for the national anthem at a high school, I believe this is at a high school event, because his father was run down by police in the Department of Justice, as in 95% of all cases referred to the Department of Justice. That's if they even take the case. According to their determination, the killing was justified, despite the video evidence from the dash cam that shows Marlon Brown being run down by a dealing police officer in Florida in 2013. And the story came across my timeline on social media. I reached out to the mother, and hopefully we'll be able to connect with them during the second hour, probably around 5 o'clock, somewhere around that time. During the first hour, our first guest schedule, we should be speaking with them in a few minutes. Miss Cherie Walker of Black Wall Street USA. That's Black Wall Street USA. You can find them online at blackwallstreet.org. So we will be obviously discussing black business, as Black Wall Street does refer to a lot of people associated with Tulsa, Oklahoma, but there were many quote-unquote Black Wall Streets where black communities were thriving economically by creating businesses and patronizing the businesses within their community. Of course, segregation played a big role. They really didn't have a choice, and it was after integration, which I believe should have happened, despite the fact that there was some negative consequences to black business. But still, when you're paying taxes, when they're taking your taxes and you're paying from infrastructure where these businesses are benefiting from your tax dollars, you should have access to everything that your money is paying for. So that's how I feel about that. But still, though, it is important that we patronize black businesses, because black businesses are more than likely the ones who are going to create jobs for black people. So that's where we need to be looking at today, as we know that there are triple what the normal unemployment rate is for the nation. You can always triple that in the black community. And black youth, black men in particular, are the most highly unemployed, most highly likely not to find a job. and black women will follow them. So we need to be creating our own jobs to hire our own people. Without further delay, we want to welcome on Ms. Cherie Walker. Do we have you on the line, ma'am?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes. Are you having problems hearing me?
Just a little bit. I'm calling you from my car. How are you doing?
Okay.
I'm just turned my volume up a little bit more on my phone. Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you for joining us today. And can you just first start off by telling people about Black Wall Street USA as represented? I told them they can go online, find the website at blackwallstreet.org. So the floor is yours.
Okay. Shall I go back and give a little bit of a history about what Black Wall Street was?
Well, for the sake of time, because our time is limited with you,
I pretty much
gave that history already. And people who listen to this station, they know that history because we talk about black history all the time. So, but tell us about the formation of Black Wall Street USA, what the mission is.
Okay, the primary goal of Black Wall Street is to outline the key elements in establishing Black Wall Street USA districts around the globe. That means all around America. Our manual shows serious persons who know how to recognize a potential district, and they can perform the necessary tasks to organize the district. This is the essential key in continued growth and revitalization of black communities and black businesses. We have, I believe it's 8 districts. People who are sitting in these chairs, and what they do is that they have to recognize areas. How can I say it? Recognize urban areas that is thriving of business, industry, and culture. That is of black businesses, industry, and culture, and it is. It will be a commercial strip that has at least 50 to 70% of more businesses owned by African Americans. So if a district person is appointed to one of these chairs, if they go into these areas and any city in America, and they recognize that there are at least 50 to 70% of black businesses in the area, what they do is they strategically go into these areas and they guide and give assistance, advice, and help in order to keep these black businesses thriving and in order for them to stay in businesses. They recognize what's necessary, what's needed in these areas, and extend their businesses in ways of I'm kind of lost.
Well, I have a question. I have a question. You said that let me see if I understand this correctly. Okay, Black Wall Street USA will set up chapters and appoint a chairperson of this chapter, and they look to identify areas where predominantly black people live. Like, for example, you keep saying cities, so we'll use cities for example. And in those cities, up to 75% of the businesses in those cities are black. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yes.
Okay, now yes. My next question, my follow-up question to that, now that I have my question after getting clarification is, what cities, where are any of these places existing? I mean, like, for example,
yes,
the closest city here is
existing in Oakland. They're existing. Actually, we set up right now, our major city is Chicago, Illinois. They are right now working in Chicago, Illinois, because they recognize that this was one of the thriving areas that we were looking for.
I'm sorry, Ms. Walker, you said one of. What do you mean? They were in the past, but they're not now? My question was, are there any areas where it is up to 75% of all the businesses in the city are black? That's what I'm asking.
Yes, Chicago, Illinois.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. Chicago, Illinois is one of the areas that the regional chapters have gone in, and they are facilitating, let's see how the dean of regional chapters told me. Her name is Judith, Miss Judith Meeks, and she is the dean of the regional chapters. And what she does is that she facilitates, train the leaders, and provide support and guidance to train and teach the regional chapter members who are in these districts how to guide the business owners, how to encourage the business owners and support the business owners.
Okay.
And what they're given is the support they need and guidance to keep their business thriving.
Okay, I have a question about that, but I'll come back to that. And at least on Black Talk Radio News, and as much as I can, I like to encourage people on this network to always have the right information, always seek out the right information, make sure we're giving out correct information, because if we don't have the correct information, we can't come to a solution to the problem, and we may not even recognize how large the problem is, and our solutions do not adequately even begin to address the problem. So in just 2 days ago, ChicagoBusiness.com published an article. And the article is titled, you know, and this was just published August 31st, 2016 by John Pletz, who owns Chicago Businesses. And it says that blacks account for 17% of the population in Chicago, but just 2% of business ownership. The trend is remarkably consistent elsewhere. 2% ownership in New York and 16% of the population. 3% in Houston, where 17% of the population in Africa is African America. In Philadelphia, blacks are 20% of the population, but only 2% of the business owner. So to see, that's why I asked that question about where are these areas, because I haven't seen them, where you have up to anywhere from 50% to 75% of black business ownership of all businesses in that city, though. I don't... That information is not correct.
It's not correct. Well, I will check into it, but I read that it has to be at least 50 to 70% for them to go in there. And Chicago, Illinois, is one of the areas that the Black Wall Street is currently working in.
Maybe and they have also a different criteria, and because only 2% of the businesses in Chicago are black or identified as black.
Identify as black businesses.
Yes.
I will look into that, but from what I have read, that is one of the cities that they are currently working on.
Okay.
Working in.
Well,
and so one of the other areas that the regional chapters are faced with, and one of their biggest enemies, is that they look into ownership of homes. And a lot of these areas, They are dealing with gentrification. One of the areas also, these areas that are being regentrified are all over America. We know Maryland, Baltimore, Houston, and gentrification is our biggest enemy, and it's a challenge, because what these people are doing is that they are allowing properties in these areas that are almost ran down in black communities. They're letting the properties go way down in value, and they are calling it urban planning, urban living. And what they're doing is they're taking these properties, once they allow the property value to go down, is that they're putting the properties up for the wealthier people, let's say white people, to come into these areas and buy these same properties for pennies on a dollar.
Then they I'm aware of that. But let me go back, though. Never mind. We'll just talk about what you're just talking about. You know, when we say they, and this is something that's been weighing heavily on my mind, is that we always deify whiteness, and that's who we talking about when we say they. We talking about white people, okay? And specifically, we talking about white power. And so, but when I hear that, we have these communities, well, if they were our communities and if these communities were thriving and if these communities had resources and these communities had influence in all areas of people activity, particularly politics, because politics is how they control the rules and the legislation and the zoning and the property taxes, and that's where all of that is control is. And I think it's important that we point out to, because we may have some listeners who don't understand how the world works, especially here behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And we should do our best to provide, basic information about how these things work. So when we say they, we are talking about politicians, correct? And most likely to be white.
Yes.
And there could be some proxy races sitting up there on the city council as well. In case you've never heard that term, proxy races, that's non-white people who assist racist whites in the mistreatment of non-white people.
Sure.
So you're saying that that's the major tool that they're using is gentrification, which I had actually called out on social media, Drew Brees, who had some pretty nasty things to say about Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco quarterback who did a one-man sit-in highlight police brutality and injustice in this country. And Drew Brees called them out. So I called out Drew Brees on Twitter and said, well, Drew Brees, where were you standing up for gentrification of New Orleans? Because he's mostly known, he came to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina and he meant so much to the city. But, you know, we all know, at least we black folks know that pay attention to these sort of things, know that a lot of the black businesses and residents were moved out of New Orleans through gentrification. So we had the bleaching of New Orleans. So you're saying this is a problem. How does this relate to black businesses?
It's very important. The reason why it is so imperative is because when they do go into these black areas and they deem it, like I say, they call it a urban planning, an urban living, in order to pleasantly tell Caucasian people, hey, this is an area that's being gentrified. You could move back to the city, and this is what we're doing. And what they're doing is they're moving in corporations, okay? They're putting businesses, major businesses, like McDonald's and Jack in the Box, and they bring in the corporations where it moves out the mom and pop stores, the small black business men and women out of their communities. So it is it's very important when they come in. When they come in here, they're moving, like in Houston, they moved out a soul food restaurant, they moved out a club that's been here for years called Red Rooster. They moved out all the little black businesses, the little black beauty salon, black beauty stores that was in that one little area, and they calling it regentrifying. They moved out all of these businesses.
Well, you know, I have a question on that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have to ask questions as they come up, and I do want to open up the phone lines to any callers who may have any questions or any information to share that will bring enlightenment. But the telephone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound, hit *6 and 1. Now, for example, this is my next question, Mrs. Walker. for example, I'm a member of the movement. It's not an organization, but it's a movement right now. And I imagine the people who started this movement will, they have talked about later forming an actual organization, but it is 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. And it focuses on building a black voting block to where we are sticking together, working on our platform and coming up with a list of demands to present to anybody, regardless of party, you know, our list of demands to politicians. And then it also encourages, obviously, black people patronizing black businesses and saying that these two areas, people activity areas, which would be economics, business would fall under economics, as well as politics. And so if you marry those two together, that is who runs this country. This is who they are. This is how they control the political process that leads to all of these racist outcomes for non-white people. So business is, if we look at them, quote unquote them, we see that their corporations come together and they create organizations where they all put money into it and they write legislation. They hire people to put whatever their agenda is into legislation, what they want to see become law. Then those lobbyists who are you know, whining and dining the politicians and what have you, sending them gifts and tickets to ball games and things of that nature, you know, they then get these people to push the legislation, and then the hope is that it will become law. So that is where business and politics, or economics and politics, that's how it works. That's what we can see here in the United States. But I don't see that happening with black people. And Mr. James Klingman and Baba Amafika, who started the movement, 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, I'm sure if they're listening now, or if they were to call in, they would agree, because that was the whole point of making the focus of their movement about black business building and maintaining and supporting and black voting. So what I'm hearing from you in these particular areas is that there is no collaboration, there is no organization among all these black businesses. Businesses should have more power, especially political power, since they not only pay taxes as individuals, but their businesses also pay taxes. And so to me, my question would be, how were they operating? Were they operating together in a political block and coming up with an agenda and operating like white people and white businesses operate, and how they get what they want? That's my question. Is, you know, we do want to talk about the problem, but what's the solution? And if the problem is that we are not working together, we are not organizing and coming, pulling our resources like white people, like white power does, then, you know, we could talk about it till we're blue in the face. Ain't nothing gonna change.
And this is correct. Nothing's going to change. This is the reason why we welcome any other organization to come and talk with us. Let's meet. We know that the power are in numbers and spreading the information to educate people. But we have to educate our people, because our people, they're not going to go to the library. They're not going to go and to these forums and find out what is exactly going on, why they cannot get the money that they need to open up a business or to create business. They do not know. But only through education can we spread the word and communicate with each other. And we do invite other organizations to come and join us, and let's pool our resources, our knowledge, our understanding, and create an understanding among each other of what we have to do. But we can't just say, hey, I can do this and my organization does this, and we stay separate. We have to come together. And Dr. Michael Carter understands this, and he welcomes people to come and talk to him and to the members in the Black Wall Street organization. This is nothing new. We understand that this has to happen. It takes a huge group of us to move anything forward.
I would agree. I would agree. But I feel like we don't have the means of, well, I'm not going to say we don't have the means. The means are there. We just haven't really employed them on a mass level. The way to reach our people and educate our people is through mass communications. And see, we're no longer in control of our own radio or television or media, whatever you want to call it. I read this year that a number of historic black publications were sold to white corporations that already was influencing the content by either rewarding advertisement or withholding advertisement. And so white influence on black publications has always been there because of the capitalist model. But now we're even losing that. We're even losing that. So, you know, the way to change minds, that the way to change is to change minds, is what I'm trying to say. First, that business owner as an individual has to change their mind about how they're going to do business. Okay, are they going to view other people as competition, or are they going to form a coalition again, like, for example, the American Legislative Exchange Commission, which most people put the Koch brothers' name on that. A lot of people know the Koch brothers, known for funding a lot of right-wing Republicans and what have you, but they also fund Democrats as well. And so, but they create the American Legislative Exchange Commission, and then all these other businesses also join. I'm talking about Fortune 500 companies that most of us shop at every day, and they are behind a lot of this legislation, even including the private prison industries have been part of this. And so I'm not seeing anything similar.
Another one of the things that we do in helping those that have been incarcerated come back into the American system, which is, you know, a demonized entity in itself, but we actually help these people that have been incarcerated for so long, and we bring them back into civilization and how to get in there, and we provide counseling, training, and assistance to bring them back into the community and be a working member back in their families and in the communities. And we have a very high success rate in this. So that's another thing that we are tackling at Black Wall Street.
You know, for example, just an example, as we get ready to wrap up our interview, and we thank you for spending this time with us today. But also in identifying resources, you know, a lot of times we want to believe that these successful, quote unquote, business people have pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. But most of the time they are benefiting from handouts from the federal government, whether that's in the form of tax loopholes and things of that nature, or are able to utilize other people's money and resources, tax dollars, and things of that nature. And another thing that I don't see a whole lot of in black media or black people talking about is the things that are happening either in their state or put on by representatives of their state specifically for businesses that's going on in Washington, D.C. Now, let me just share this. I posted this to our social media platform, btrcommunity.com, in the upcoming or the event section. But let me pull up this upcoming event. This came because I do follow the representatives, all the politicians in my state, because I want to know what's going on. And of course, they are talking about business, is among other things. So on September 12th in Washington, D.C., let me get these event details. They are going to have at the Congressional Auditorium Capitol Visitors Center, let me see, from starting at 8 o'clock a.m. to 8:30 of breakfast, then a presentation that lasts from 8:30 to 11:40, presentations by guest speakers, and then they'll have their closing remarks. Now, this is being put on by a number. It's called the 2016 North Carolina Business and Economic Development Summit. Yeah, that's the name of it. But it seems like they've been having this every year. And so I don't never hear black businesses or black media putting out this type of information. And you better believe all the white businesses from my area that utilize these resources will be there.
Well, we need to be there as well at Black Wall Street. But we do have, besides the Inmate Relief and Reentry National Committee, we also have the Economic Developmental Council, where Ethel Kane Russell is the national director. And this is what we discuss in these meetings. But yes, we need more people to become involved so that way we can actually not just do legislation among ourselves, but to basically spread the word so that way everyone can get involved, so that way we can actually put businesses, black businesses, on the map. But it's very hard when we don't have those people who want or who aren't interested in doing a business, because most likely they're trying to open businesses using white banks. And OPM has always been the strategy that most successful and large corporations use. OPM meaning other people's money. This is what we were taught. When you go in and you become a bank teller, a customer service agent, OPM is extremely important. But we also know that these larger banks will not give small or give black people the money that they need in order to open their businesses or to even extend their businesses. So it's very difficult, and the Economic Development Council is trying to go around that. We do have to come up with more ideas in order to help black people facilitate their ideas and open businesses in order to do business.
You know, as we already wrap it up, I just want to give out another resource. Mr. Marlon Adams, who has been a guest on this program at culturalgrassroots.com, who has a portal that he's still working on, still building. I think he's still in the stage of just collecting 50,000 emails of people who are interested in crowdfunding black businesses. But again, taking it back to politics, you know, I think Barack Obama, CEO of USA Inc., did throw black people a bone, black businesses a bone.
Yes, he did.
And I don't know if he did it specifically, but black people, they take advantage of it, will benefit from it. So, you know, he could have just did it because they trying to stimulate the economy. But the SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission, last year, I think it was late last year or earlier this year, passed new rules that now that instead of people just like you see these crowdfunding campaigns today for to start businesses or to come up with an invention or whatever, and then all these people give $5, $10, they might get a t-shirt or a mug. But now the SEC is going to allow you to now invest in businesses over the internet, just like you make donations in a crowdfunding campaign. So that's just what the law does. Now, I'm sure there are stipulations and rules that you got to follow to make sure everything's in order. But like Mr. Marlon Adams was saying, is that black businesses, when we have these ideals, that's another workaround instead of going to these banks. And we could say black bank all we want to, but who are they regulated by? They regulated by the Federal Reserve. They ought to have FDIC. So they still part of the same system. So this is a way for individuals to come together, identify companies, good ideals. Let's call it Shark Tank or something. And people present their ideals, and then black people become investors. They don't just donate. They become investors where they can, if they are for, of course, it's going to have to be a for-profit model. But instead of them just giving away a donation because they want to see a black person succeed, well, they could be a part of that success and be an investor. So, I mean, there are things happening that aren't widely being publicized on quote-unquote black radio because it ain't really black radio. So, anyway.
Well, can we find this information reach
out to Mr. Adams. I'm going to give his email address so Mr. Carter want to reach out to him. Let me pull up his email address. His website is
if you just give me a moment, let me reach a pen here. That is great information that to give out, and that I can place on Black Wall Street.
See, this is the sort of information that people will actually. Let me say this the correct way. This information goes out 24/7 on Black Talk Radio Network. This, the real Black Talk Radio. The other stuff that's controlled by Clear Channel and Radio One, they are not really trying to, you know, they may mention some stuff briefly, but, you know, this is why we need our own radio to reach the masses. So, but it is cultural. The website is, I'm pulling it up, culturalgrassroots.com. culturalgrassroots.com, Mr. Marlon Adams. You can actually get his contact information from there. And so I've had him on a couple of times over the years, past year and a half, and talking about these things. I even did some video interviews with him. So I do see that as a vehicle, as a workaround for redlining in the banks is for us to pool our resources in the for-profit businesses and become investors. But people got to come right and correct. They just can't. You can't have a good idea, but you don't have a business plan. So people, we need to be studying. We need to be reading. We need to be reaching out to those that can help us with business plans or other resources. We need to even use the enemy's resources. I certainly use the VA system, business system. I get a lot of information, and actually the VA rep here for businesses in North Carolina is a Black woman, and she's a professor also at a HBCU, and she sends out all that information. I'm getting emails about everything happening in North Carolina that they are doing. And so the Art of War tells us when we can utilize our resources and not use our own, then we are in fact increasing our own resources. So yeah, reach
and
out to culture.
I have to invite you. You need to become a part of our economic development council to help get this information out.
Well, I'm already putting out. I'm sorry, I have to decline because I already got too much on my plate. I run a nonprofit organization. My mission is to build Black mass media across this nation, because we're getting all this incorrect information. We're not in control. We're being bombarded with propaganda. So I like to stay focused on my mission and don't spread me out too much. But I'm putting this information out now through mass media. So again, we've done these interviews.
You are.
Yes.
You are.
And other people other people
Tim,
on our network.
Tell people, anybody that would like to join our Economic Developmental Council, because we reach out to all organizations, small and large. And we're not one of those people who say, oh, this is mine, this is what we do. We include everyone. And, you know, people can just reach out to BWS, USAEDC at blackwallstreet.org, 662-336-6302. Ethel Kane Russell will be elated to speak with them, because we're always looking for ideas. We're always looking for ways to expand on how we do business to uplift Black people and to create business in order for us, for our survival. Let's say that, for our survival.
All right, well, thank you, Ms. Walker, as we conclude.
And may I say, please join blackwallstreet.org/join.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, you have a great day, ma'am, and you be safe
too.
Out here.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, we are going to take a look at some of the news of the day. I'm trying to arrange this interview. Well, actually, it's already been arranged. I'm just excited, hopefully, you know, that it goes through. But it is a very sensitive situation. As I put in the title of today's promo materials for today's broadcast, during the second hour, I'm looking forward to connecting with a Florida mother. I know her name, but I'm not going to say her name right now. Florida mom and her son. Her son refused. Let me clarify that. It wasn't her and her son, but her son refused to stand for the national anthem. And I'm assuming this was at high school because of his age. I think he's around 15, 16 years old. and this just happened yesterday. And she, the mother, made a post on social media, and I'm connected to the mother on social media. I believe I may have even interviewed her back in 2013 after her the father of her child was murdered, and it was caught on film, was murdered by the police when they ran him over with the car, purposely ran him over with the car. I mean, it was like, you think you was watching a scene out of the movie, what do they call that movie, Death Race or something like that, where they try to kill each other or run over people and get points for running over people and what have you. This is from police dash cam video. If you didn't know what you was watching, you might think it was some low budget, you know, one of those type of films or something like that. And so, you know, this is in the wake of, and I'm not saying that this young man was motivated to do this by Colin Kaepernick, but a lot of people are having serious conversations about racism in this country, about corruption in this country. And I don't know if that's what Kaepernick doing his one-man sit-in is what, I guess, encouraged this young man to do his own one-man sit-in protest. So, when I come back on the other side, I'm going to just go over some news stories today that I have looked at over the past 24 hours, and I'll hit the phone lines if anybody has any questions, comments, or news they want to share. But at the top of the hour, we hope to connect with this black family and talk about this murder of his father, and then people expecting him at school to stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag. And then just think about that. Say that again to yourself. And think about what people are doing. You're pledging allegiance to a flag, to a inanimate object, to, in fact, a rag. You're pledging allegiance to a rag. And I don't know, I have never memorized the words. I know bits and pieces of it because I've watched sports, and it's always been a part of sports. But they want to talk about, in this Pledge of Allegiance, it talks about what the flag represents. Although at these football games, they are not really pledging allegiance to a flag. They're singing the national anthem while looking at a flag and giving the modified Nazi salute. Yes, I said modified Nazi salute, because in the 1930s, they were giving a Nazi salute. This is before the rise of the Nazis, which a lot of people don't understand was funded by rich white people, the Nazi Party was, here in America. And they even came here and studied the programs and how they was mistreating people. This is the history that they don't want to talk about. This is why they don't want Colin Kaepernick and people who are high profile like him doing these sort of things, because it leads to these other conversations, which hopefully will lead to the education of people. So we'll, I'm looking forward. I'm proud of this young man for making a stand. And how dare somebody try to make him stand up? And I wonder if this teacher even knew that his father had been run over by police, murdered. And then the United States government, through the Department of Justice, said it was justified. Really? Really? Did they watch the same video that I watched? So, we'll talk about that and more when we come back on the other side of this break. Going to kick some message music. Come back, check the phone lines. If not, I will just go over some of the other news that caught my eye during the past 24 hours. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. We'll be back.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold. It's happened before. In 2000, Saddam Hussein announced Iraqi oil would be traded in euros, not dollars. Sanctions and an invasion followed. Some say because the Americans were desperate to prevent OPEC from transferring oil trading in all its member countries to the euro. Not the case in places like Libya and many of the Gulf states. A gold dinar would have given oil-rich African and Middle Eastern countries the power to turn around to their energy-hungry customers and say, sorry, the price has gone up and we want gold.
The United States should welcome the self-determination of Africans. They certainly have denied self-determination to Africans inside the United States, so we're not surprised by anything that the United States would do.
If Gaddafi had an intent to try to reprice his oil or whatever else the country was selling in the global markets and accept something else as a currency or maybe launch a gold dinar currency, any move such as that would certainly not be welcomed by the power elite today who are responsible for controlling the world's central banks. So yes, that would certainly be something that would cause his immediate dismissal and the need for other reasons to be brought forth for removing him from power.
It's one of these things that you have to plan almost in secret, because as soon as you say you're going to change over from the dollar to the something else, you're going to be targeted. There were two conferences on this, one in 96 and another one in the year 2000, called the World Mataba Conference, organized by Gaddafi. And everybody was interested.
Something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs. A gold dinar would have given oil-rich African and Middle Eastern countries the power to turn around to their energy-hungry customers and say, sorry, the price has gone up and we want gold.
And our resolve is clear. The people of Libya must be protected.
Others say it's about oil. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya.
Wave your hands in the air, you're waving like you just don't care. If the party's hype and you're feeling nice too, yeah, oh yeah. Wave your hands in the air, you're waving like you just don't care. If the party's hype and you're feeling nice too, yeah.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Broadcasting to you on these digital airwaves from blacktalkradionetwork.com. Do want to remind you, the only way that we are going to crowdfund a black mass media network, and I'm not just talking about online sites, I'm talking about brick and mortar buildings, taking advantage of new technology to get back what was lost to us, and that was our independent black voices through media, through the local radio stations. And now most of those stations are owned by Clear Channel or some other corporation that is, their primary goal is to bring in advertisement revenue from McDonald's, from Walmart, from all of these corporations, and many of them are involved in 21st century slavery and human trafficking, but that don't seem to matter. We still, you know, throw our business to these people. And then, you know, I'm going to be real. In some cases, they the only game in town, so you really don't have a choice. So that is the conundrum that people find themselves in certain areas. So let's go over some of the news stories today. First, let me see if there is anybody with a question or a comment. Okay, we're all good there. Let me just go over some of the news stories I shared on a new social media platform built by the Black Talk Media Project for the black community. The way we're trying to sustain this particular project is through, it's a subscriber-based network. No ads, no nothing like that. You won't see anything like that. Nothing but the information that the members, the subscribers, post. So this is what I posted. You can check out my profile there, Scotty T. That's me. See a little picture of me and my grandson, one of my grandsons. I just shared that article that I was discussing with Ms. Walker from Chicago Business.com, who owns Chicago businesses, and the simple answer to that is very few non-white people. Another thing I did, let me pull it back up. Well, I already got it up. Let me get there right quick. One of the things I also picked up on is, you know, we often want to point to Asians and act like Asians are doing so much better than us. That's a stereotype, y'all. That's a stereotype, and we help perpetuate those stereotypes like we help perpetuate all other stereotypes. And when I say we, I ain't talking about black people specifically. I'm talking about everybody. But as I was reading, scanning over that article, it wasn't relevant to what I was talking to Ms. Walker about, but it is relevant because it is we're often comparing ourselves to Asians. So let's look at how much businesses do the Asians run in Chicago. Asians make up just 6% of the Chicago area population, and they account for 10% of the businesses. The same trend is true in other cities in the U.S. as a whole, where Asians make up 5% of the population and 9% of the business owners. All right, so are they doing better than black businesses? Yes, they're doing better than black businesses, but is it by much? Is it really by that far? Not really, not in the grand scheme of things. And guess what? Because I know if the other areas are like the Asian businesses here in the area that I live in, you know, a lot of black people, like, for example, Charlotte, we'll use Charlotte. We can't use Mount Holly because that's just a little town, and I don't even live in that town, but that's where all the businesses are located, closest to me. But we'll use Charlotte. All right, so we'll use Charlotte. Most of the Asian businesses customer base is black people. And whether we're talking about the Chinese restaurant, whether we're talking about the all you can eat buffets and that kind of stuff, whether we're talking about the hair and nail salons, even the clothing stores and what have you, a lot of the also gas stations and what have you, and Pakistanis and people like that, they are considered Asians as well. They come from different regions of Asia. Even if they're born here, you know, we're talking about tracing their roots back to where their ancestors came from and how they arrived them on this land. So those are Asians too. And most of it is supported by what? Black people, black dollars. So we find ourselves being a very critical piece of the problem. So who do we blame for that? Who do we blame for that? We can, I guess, you know, like the title of the book says, The Miseducation of the Negro, on how economics works and how economics is also the root of your political power. So who do we blame for the miseducation? Well, how are people educated? Well, most people educated through we're not talking about schools and what have you, but we want to talk about mass communications. That talk radio is big for a reason in the United States. So it you tune in to quote unquote black radio. What are you hearing about? Are you having serious conversations on those stations, or are you talking about, you know, somebody then wrote in a letter about their spouse cheating on them or boyfriend ain't doing them right, and this thrice divorced comedian hosting this radio show is gonna give you some dating advice? So we have to identify our areas where we are falling short and change our behavior. Again, the change begins with the individual. So I didn't mean to go off on that, but it's just something I noticed or observed in this article. The next article, new questions arise about the Clinton Foundation ties to... sorry about that interruption. New questions arise about the Clinton Foundation ties to State Department. This is an article coming to you from the Boston Globe, and I'm just going to say this. They could come out with emails where she plotted with other people to murder somebody. There ain't nothing going to be done about it, and millions of people going to still go out there and participate in the charade of the 2016 elections and cast a vote for this woman. Nothing this one, all the crookedness, all the, man, it's right there in your face. But I mean, these stories just keep coming out and coming out and coming out. But we'll hear people keep making excuses as to why they should participate and cast a vote for Hillary Clinton because she ain't Donald Trump. Or even cast a vote for Donald Trump because he ain't Hillary Clinton. They both represent white power and racism in this country. Both of them. So, you know, it just the insanity of it all, but we're going to ignore all this, and then we're going to tell our children, you know, to just work hard, and that's how you get ahead, study hard and play by the rules and just be a upstanding law-abiding citizen. But then we will tell our children that I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. And if your high school student is one that keeps up with the news and politics specifically, and they've seen these stories about this, I mean, even Colin Kaepernick brought it up. Talking about, look at Hillary Clinton. Wow, anybody else would have been in jail deleting all those emails. What's that about? Is that what we stand for? That certain people are above the law? So emails keep coming out showing this woman clearly violated the law, but in the very least is incompetent. This is a sign of, if you want to believe, if you that naive to think that there's nothing nefarious going on, well, then in the very least, you got to know this is an incompetent person. Did this sort of mess happen? Name a former Secretary of State. Did this sort of mess kind of happen and all these stories coming out? All these emails coming out that should have been disclosed, that weren't disclosed because you in the first place was working outside of the law and how what the law prescribes for federal record keeping. So a top aide to Hillary Clinton at the State Department agreed to try to obtain a special diplomatic passport for an advisor to former President Clinton in 2009, according to emails released Thursday, raising new questions about whether people tied to the Clinton Foundation receive special access at the department. And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. Pay to play. This is political graft, and it's as old as American politics itself. Nothing new here. But people will then use that as an excuse. Oh, they all do it. Oh, they do? But then, so what is this? Just criminality that you accept? While then trying to point the finger at non-white people and saying why did they break the law or they wouldn't be in prison and you know. But then we see people like this break the law, and they never even get to smell what an orange jumpsuit, you know, smells like. What it feels like to, you know, give up your clothes to somebody else. They're going to give you a, make you get in the shower while they watching you shower, and then give you an orange jumpsuit and some sandals and a little mat to carry to your cell. She'll never, that ain't going to happen to her, because we don't have a system based on justice. The law is for the oppressed. It's not for the oppressors. They didn't write these laws to apply to themselves. These laws were written to apply to us. But then we continue to participate and co-sign on to this sort of stuff. And still go out there and vote like ain't none of this, like none of this matters. That's what you're saying to the young people. It don't matter. Cheat your way through school. Sleep with the professor, get A's and all that. Hey, anything gets acceptable when you're trying to obtain power. Anything goes. If you want to be in this particular class, the political class that wields the power, then you can't hold yourself to the same moral codes and standards of, you know, that everybody else is expected to. So those are some of the stories that I shared with you on BTR Community at btrcommunity.com. So let me go ahead and try to connect with Miss Brown, who is the mother of this young black man who refused to stand for the national anthem. Give me just a moment as I try to find that number for you. I tell you what, we're going to take another station identification break. It's the top of the hour. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be back on the other side, and hopefully we'll connect with our guest for today, our second guest for today. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
I'm tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name again is Scotty Reed. I'm attempting to connect with Miss Brown now. Miss Brown, do we have you? Okay, it's still ringing. I'm sorry.
Please leave your message for...
Alrighty. Okay, Miss Brown, this is Scotty with Black Talk Radio News. If you want to give us a call back at 704-951-5030, that's our studio line. We would love to hear from you. I did receive your other message about your son being unavailable, but if you want to tell a story, then please, by all means, give us a call. That's 704-951-5030.
To replay your message, press 1. To continue recording...
Alrighty. Okay, Miss Brown...
Your message has been sent.
All right.
Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
Let me just go ahead and tell the story as it was told on social media. Hopefully we'll hear from Miss Brown. Let me make sure my line stays open. Okay. And if we're not able to connect with them today, we certainly can give it another try. So, but let me just pull up. Now, I posted a screenshot of what was posted to social media by Miss Brown late last night. I just found out my son didn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance today at school. The teacher gestured for him to stand, and he respectfully declined. His father, Marlon Brown Sr., was killed May the 8th, 2013, by former D-Lynn police officer James Paul Harris and the United States deemed it justified. Now you want him to pledge allegiance. Tonight, I go to bed a proud parent. To my son, continue to stand firm on what you believe. And she posted a video of the murder of Marlon Brown Sr. that she, you know, just referenced. James Paul Harris, who was working for D-Lynn Police at the time, and this is in Fort Florida. And again, if you, there's no way you could look at that video and come out on the other side of watching that video and say it was justified. Really? And I do recall, as when I first heard this story, and I was saying to a family member, I know this story. I remember reporting on this in 2013 and seeing the video. And if it's what I think it is, it was a traffic stop. He got out the car, ran, and the police just ran him down. No, he wasn't wanted for murder. He didn't just commit a bank robbery or anything. They wasn't looking for anybody like that. He didn't fit the description of a serial killer or anything like that. It's a traffic stop. So he gets out and run. He's not here to tell you why he got out and ran. And the officer, Paul Harris, no, let me not pay him the respect of calling him an officer. Let's call him a slave catcher. So apparently James Paul Harris was a lazy slave catcher. And he was like, I'm not going to get out my car and run and chase people and what have you. I'm just going to run them over with my car. Had to be the conversation he had in his head when he did what he did. And it's right there on video, indisputable evidence, as they say. Indisputable or not, we have seen across this so-called country similar outcomes in far too many cases to name. Far too many. In fact, so many that I had forgotten about who Marlon Brown Sr. was. And had not realized that over, 3 years ago, apparently I reached out to his widow to get this story out to people on this network. And so she must have accepted my friend request and whatnot. So then that's how I was able to see this last night, because it was marked only for friends. And I sent her a message and I said, if you want this to stay on the down low, or because I see, marked your privacy, I won't mention it, I won't share it, but I love to have you and your son come on and tell this story, especially since everybody's talking about the national anthem. Not everybody, but a lot of people are talking about the roots of the national anthem, what the song is really about, who the writer is that wrote it, a racist white person who was delighting in the deaths and probably was exaggerating too, try to make it look like they were so triumphant when they really weren't. They were getting their behinds handed to them. And I was thinking about this last night, but I'm not going to go off on this tangent, but I was thinking about the War 1812 and how that was a point in time where, there should have been another Civil War. The first Civil War should have happened after the British were defeated and one third of the Revolutionary Army were black, free black people. And some of them were enslaved, because you had cowardly white people who enslaved black people who could substitute an enslaved African to go fight in the Revolutionary Army for his freedom and liberty against the horrible British and what have you. So that should have been the first Civil War, is when those racists snuck off to Philadelphia or wherever it was they snuck off and didn't tell everybody else, part of the revolution, that they was going to write up this constitution and that they was going to continue to practice racism and codify it in their laws and bylaws and start stripping black people. Well, they had already, even in colonial times, were stripping free black people of their rights to bear arms and things of that nature. So that's when the first Civil War should have happened. Whatever reason, it didn't. The second time it should have happened was 1812. Every single enslaved African should have rose up in rebellion. Every single African should have heeded the call to arms by the British to turn on these racists who were stealing land, killing Indians, not Indians, but indigenous folks, committing all sort of genocides, enslaving folks. Why, you know, again, I guess the only thing I can deduce is a lack of communications back then. You know, communications weren't instantaneously as they are right now, with me speaking into a microphone and somebody halfway around the world hearing the words come out of some speakers. So I want to chalk it up to that they just didn't know that the war was going on and the British had issued this call, and that's why they didn't rise up and cut those evil people heads off and what have you and then take over. That was a point. We could have done that. And then again in 1865, when there was over 200,000 free black as well as formerly enslaved Africans in the Union Army, who without had, if they had not joined, then guess what? We would all been whistling Dixie today. That would have been the national anthem, and you would have been given a modified Nazi salute to the Confederate flag. So there have been points in history to where there could have been a different outcome, but there was no different outcome because enough people, for whatever reason, did not take the step towards freeing themselves. What Colin Kaepernick, what this young man, the son of Marlon Brown Sr., did was take a step towards freeing their minds. You got to free your mind, as Funkadelic, that album Free Your Mind, Your Ass Will Follow. I don't like the remake of that by what was that, In Vogue. I don't like the remake because it kind of like, you know, kills the message and sexualizes it. But yeah, first you got to free your mind, then your ass will follow, as the song says. That is what people not standing and staging sit-ins are in fact doing. They're freeing their minds from the matrix, freeing their minds of this false sense of patriotism and allegiance to a very evil people and what it all represents. See, in order to keep people from just outright condemning this country and doing something about it and starting something new and afresh, like could have happened after the Revolutionary War was over, like could have happened in 1812 if the British didn't agree to leave these racist enslavers in power and did not work to exterminate them while liberating. Well, actually, they would have been liberating themselves, as again, black guns have always mattered in these battles. But again, they don't put these in the history books, and most of us don't read this sort of stuff. So then we have a different recall of history, and that recall of history is based on lies. So that is why communications is important. Mass media communications is to brainwash people, brainwash the masses with all of these images, these raise up all these false idols and what have you, and have people bowing down to it. So that is what Mr. I'm assuming his last name is Brown, but the young Brown did when he told it, when he refused, respectfully refused. He didn't get belligerent or anything. He just sat in his seat. And now I wonder if that teacher even knows that this child's father was run over, murdered by police. The squad car was the weapon of choice. And then the Department of Justice came in, and despite having access to this video evidence, said, hey, it was perfectly within the rules of policing for him to run over this man, pin him under the car. The slave catcher even gets out the car, walks around to the front of the car, looking under there, seeing Mr. Brown down there being asphyxiated by the car, because the car's on top of him. No attempt, no rush whatsoever to render aid to get the damn car off of him. None whatsoever. And then you expect his son to pledge allegiance to a rag that does not stand for liberty and justice for all? You want people to have blind obedience to people in uniforms And it was awful interesting to see a lot of these people in these uniforms possibly taking the first steps to freeing their minds, saying that they did not volunteer to be in the United States military for Colin Kaepernick to not be able to do what he did. He said that's exactly what we're told we're fighting for. His right, his constitutional right to protest peacefully. A couple of veterans said, and I'm one of those vets, but a couple of vets said. Also, he did not, this one vet said, he did not volunteer to keep sweeping police brutality under the rug. See, they wasn't expecting that. They wasn't expecting that. So it is good to see, you know, that Colin Kaepernick has generated so much support out there and so many conversations and other people questioning their blind allegiance to a rag that stands for what, at least 200 and something years of racism and slavery. Because again, slavery has never been abolished. It's in the 13th Amendment that they can put you in slavery as punishment for crime. Do think we are able to connect with Miss Brown. Let me make sure that your line is open. Miss Brown, do we have you on the line?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing as best I can under these terroristic conditions.
Yes. Am I on with you?
Yes, you are on live right now on Black Talk Radio News. And again, I got your message. I'm sorry that your son couldn't join us. I know you said last night that he was excited about the invitation, but hopefully we can hook up with him at a better time. But I'm so glad that you called in to tell your son's story or retell it, because I already told it. I'm sorry I just couldn't contain myself, because I was just as excited as you were to see this young man express his free will to stand on principle. So thank you for joining us, Miss Brown. Let's start with this. Your son's father, Marlon Brown Sr., as I was just talking about, was killed on May 8, 2013 by a former slave catcher with the D-Lynn Police Department in Florida. And if I remember correctly, the Department of Justice investigated and deemed it was justified. So is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. So please tell as much as you want about the circumstances surrounding that as you work your way up to telling us about your son's courageous stand on principle.
Yes. Basically, May 8, 2013, Marlon was hit by a DeLand Police Department police officer. 12:30 in the morning, followed him into a small field in the backyard of some people and hit him. And it went to the grand jury. They deemed it justified. The officer was definitely fired soon after they saw the video, which we have released to the public and can be seen by anyone, which we encourage people to look at it and see what the United States calls a justified killing. It can be seen on YouTube, Execution in a Vegetable Garden. And since then, we've just been traveling all over, definitely connecting the dots of families around Florida, around the world, and just trying to definitely come together in solidarity and coming up with a plan of how we can collectively go to the Department of Justice, the president, whoever, and work out some true changes. We definitely know that it's going to take changing actual laws to get justice, because we're hearing the same scenarios, family after family, where the officers are allowed to hide behind the badge, say that they were in fear of their lives. The same stories across the world, and they're being allowed to kill us without consequence, and that has to stop.
Specifically,
so that kind of leads up to where we are today. And traveling around, my son has definitely learned and gained a lot of knowledge with, you know, what's right, what's wrong, you know, what's in the pledge, what does it stand for, you know, who are we, what, you know, where did we come from? He's just been gaining an abundance of knowledge by meeting different people. And so definitely we commend the, and I'm bad with names, but the football player who decided not to stand.
Colin
and my
Kaepernick.
Son is an awesome football player, so I'm sure that probably had a lot to do with it as well. He's 10th grade, made the varsity football team at the Grand High School, so that's an interest sport. So he's, you know, he's on and he sees what these people are doing. So I think it's awesome that they're using their platform to speak volume because I start listening. So my son, of course, he had an opportunity to hear and see what he did and himself to not stand at school during, you know, Pledge of Allegiance. And again, the teacher kind of beckoned him and he politely, you know, looked and kind of took his head no. And she respected it, and he remained sitting. He said he did have a moment when all of the students kind of turned around and looked at him. He was kind of stand, you know. I don't know. But no, he dug deep inside of himself and learned what he knew. And he stood firm on what he believed. He sat. And I was just, I put on my post on Facebook that I went to bed last night a very, very proud parent.
Yeah, we're able to hear you, but it sounds like you may be on a cell and we may have a little bad connection.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. The listener should be able to make out what you're saying, because I'm able to hear what you're saying. But the football player's name for the San Francisco 49ers is Colin Kaepernick. So that did, I had asked that question earlier in the program. I wonder if this influenced this young man, seeing Colin Kaepernick use his platform to take a stand, and you know, which he is catching a whole lot of heat from all directions, you know, even from the people in the quote unquote black community are taking shots at Colin. But so your son was motivated or inspired by Colin's stand as well, or his sit in.
Yes, he was very motivated by that. He definitely voiced that was one of the things that helped us to determine that that's what he wanted to do. So that was a very big influential portion of what he did.
And so you said that the teacher respected his constitutional right to peacefully protest and remain in his seat. So I'm taking that there were no further conversations with the school. They didn't try to discipline him or try to say, you know, we need to stand for the anthem or anything like that occur?
Nope. She definitely respected his opinion to not stand and listen to us what he had done in school that day. So from that, though, we have come up with an idea, because Marlon, if he were alive today, he would be celebrating his 42nd birthday on September 19th. That's coming up soon. So what we have decided to do and what we're working on, and we're kind of excited about it, is we're asking for a day of solidarity for Marlon. For September 19th, and where Marlon was a graduate of Bland High School. So we're going to be asking for other students to stand, to sit along with my son, Marlon Jr., on September 19th during the call for Pledge of Allegiance, that they will not participate in that in honor and in an effort to stand in solidarity for Marlon. What would have been his 42nd birthday.
Are you cognizant of that this is in the tradition of black resistance, that these sit-ins, because here in North Carolina where I am, you know, part of the proud history was the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, you know, which has such a luminary such as H. Rap Brown, now known as Imam Jamil Alameen, many, many others. I think, no, he wasn't part of that. But anyway, SNCC was behind the student-led sit-ins that were occurring at lunch counters across the United States. Here in North Carolina, I think it was in Greensboro. So that is what I'm calling these, not a refusal to stand, but a civil rights era sit-in, a nonviolent protest.
Yep. Well, that's what we're planning to have on September 19th, and definitely in the honor of what would have been his birthday. And we've had a teacher out of Texas University that always given us the legal aspect of that, where I guess, and I don't have it directly in front of me, where it was decided that, that students don't have to stand in Florida. So they're not doing anything that against, you know, the Constitution or against the law, that they have the ability to make a choice. As long as they're not going to go above and beyond and cause any kind of disturbance, which we're not asking them to do. We're just asking them to definitely stand on, you know, their beliefs and stand in solidarity with us. So we're going to definitely be giving that information to the parents as well. Hopefully they will have the conversation with their children in reference to what the Pledge of Allegiance stands for, as well as the law and the legal portions on what their rights are. And on September 19th, hopefully, we will have a bunch of students sitting in and not standing. So
let me share that information with you. One of our listeners posted on one of our social media pages, and I want to thank you, Makaili Kamal, for posting this. Section, this is the law. Section 17, I'm not sure if that's 171 or 17.1, but section 171 does not specify nor impose penalties for violating the section of the code. According to the Congressional Research Service report to Congress in 2008, the flag code is a codification of customs and rules established for the use of certain civilians and civilian groups, which, of course, the NFL is a civilian group. This school is a civilian group. These are not military, members of the military, or this isn't the military, which has, by law, have to observe certain customs and regulations pertaining to the flag. So it goes on to say that there is no penalty or punishment. Is specified in the flag code for display of the flag of the United States in a manner other than as suggested. Cases have concluded that the flag code does not prescribe conduct, but is merely declaratory and advisory. In other words, this is what he put. He said, in other words, the flag code serves as a guide, and it is followed on a voluntary basis. You won't be forced to stand for the national anthem, nor hauled off to jail if you don't. Cases brought because of something in the code, mainly ones that involve defacing the flag, which is not what people are doing, have made their way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the justices have upheld that such conduct is protected by the First Amendment. So if you can burn a flag according to the Supreme Court, which they said that is legal, free speech that civilians or citizens enjoy, certainly you can sit down during the national anthem. There's no law to force you. And like somebody said on Twitter, they said that if you want to live in a country where they force you to stand for the national anthem, you know, you might want to apply for a visa to North Korea, you know, to one of those places like that, because that's in fact what you are trying to impose upon us or certain people, but by bullying them into conforming. So I just wanted to share that, because he shared that last night and I didn't know that. But I did know there is no law. They can't do anything to you. They rely on bullying and peer pressure to force you to do these things that you've been trained to do without thought, going back to kindergarten.
Right. And I just want to add, I'll tag this on your page. It's called the federal Court Deferred Parents when it comes to the Pledge of Allegiance, and it gives very specifics on what they can do. And it also quotes other cases that have gone to the circuit court. And again, it doesn't, there's no law against it. So I'll try to remember to text along with your things, but I definitely have that along with the flyer for the Day of Solidarity as well.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time out to share this wonderful story with our listeners, with the Black Talk Radio Network family. I'm just so proud of your son, and you make sure you tell him that too, okay? Please tell him that we're proud of him and to continue to be a man of principle.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
You have a great afternoon, ma'am. Be safe.
All right, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right, that was Miss Brown joining us from Florida, where her son, whose father, Marlon Brown Sr., was run over was murdered, death by vehicle, by a police officer. It was a slave catcher, all on tape. And a jury, a grand jury was convened, and they said, oh, that's perfectly okay as a slave catcher carries out his duties of slave catching. Just keeping it real with you folks. We want to use terms and context that don't even apply. We always talk about slavery as past tense. When if you look at the supreme law of the land, as they call the U.S. Constitution, it clearly states that slavery is certainly okay as punishment for crime. And they even made up laws to criminalize behavior, like people congregating, talking together on the street, you know, on the corner or something. People just stopping. Hey, how you doing? Ain't seen you in a while. Hey, did you hear about what happened on Mr. Brown's farm? And you know, or did you hear about that new invention or something? Yeah, just people talking. They criminalized that and put people in prison. They called it, like, what do they call that? Loitering. But they only enforced it against black people. And this is still going on to this day. Going on this day. And we want to talk about slavery in past tense. It's ridiculous. So, certainly glad to see people freeing their minds from the matrix. All right, that is the end of my program. Later on today, or tonight rather, will be Tando Radio Show. It will be a pre-recorded broadcast, as Dave, the host of the program, had some things to take care of at the regularly scheduled time. So he recorded his program this morning, and so I will make sure that gets out over the airwaves and follow his instructions for his program. So that's Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. I'm so glad the weekend is here. The reason I'm glad is because now I will be able to at least take a Saturday and maybe half a Sunday to get to work and finishing up these reports. At the end of every month or the beginning of the new month is when the Black Talk Media Project compiles all this data in terms of its the statistical reports of our media operations, whether it's how many people tuned in to Black Talk Radio's digital radio station and for how long, or how many podcasts were downloaded, or, you know, that type of stuff. That information goes out at the beginning of every month to our donors, those people who are helping to crowdfund our media operations that are being, again, conducted by the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. So that's why I'm looking forward to the weekend, so I can get these reports, because I always want to see the data myself. I'm anxious to see the data. And so I'm definitely looking forward to finishing up those reports and getting those out to those who have contributed to the Black Talk Media Project, because they believe black media matters and they recognize the problem is we are not in control of our voices over the mass communication networks of the corporations aided by the states. And so therefore we have to find a solution, and the solution is alternative mass communication, talking about digital radio. All right, so if you would like to make a contribution, got t-shirts, thank you t-shirts that say Black Radio Stations Matter right on the front, that we give in exchange as a thank you to those who contribute $25 or more if they want more t-shirts. Also launched a new community, the subscriber based network, just $2 a month, $24 a year. Man, you probably spend that on soda pops that you shouldn't be drinking. So become a subscriber, join the BTR community, the new online black social media platform built specifically to aid black people. That's what we've always been about, establishing safe spaces for digital content produced by black people so that they can talk and communicate with each other without interference from those who would sow seeds of division and whatnot. So check us out, btrcommunity.com. Become a member, contribute, share information, anything that you need, just ask, put it out there. You need any kind of help, just, you know, this is our online community. All right, so I'll be back on air Monday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time with another broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. And again, Tando Radio Show is coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Recognize that we do live on a battlefield. They are still practicing slavery, and in the process, they killing people like they murdered Mr. Marlon Brown Sr. And the only way that we're going to bring about a change is for us to change our mind and say we are not going to participate. We're just not going to do it. We're not going to uphold this system. We're not going to co-sign on to this system that is producing injustice. And so, again, the first step to change is changing your mind. And that is really what we want to use mass media, or it should be used for, is to change minds. Change minds, then we can change the system. That said, y'all be safe out there over this weekend. Peace and blessings to all.